We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Yes! Oh, it is.
It is!
The 8 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show here on 560 WQAM. Streaming all over the internet, WQAM.com on your computer. Get at us on your smartphone, the radio.com app. If you'd like to text in, share your wisdom with us, 56022 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. By the way, on memorable moments, if you go, and you know what, I think Tolbert Bain had a point about Kenny Calhoun batting down the two-point conversion in 83. That was the beginning of the Hurricanes dynasty, and that play decided the championship for Miami. First ever national title for Hurricanes football. But if you're looking between the Ray Allen shot and the Renteria hit, the walk-off in 1997 in the 11th inning, you know, Big O is all in with Renteria being bigger because that was the end of the series. That was the walk-off. But I would say for Ray Allen's shot, you don't have a chance for any kind of a walk-off if not for that shot. The series is over if he doesn't hit that shot, right? That he brought Miami back from the dead with that shot. San Antonio was ready to celebrate. They were wheeling the O'Brien trophy out to the floor. It was in the tunnel, and they were setting up the yellow velvet ropes for the championship celebration for San Antonio. That shot could not have been bigger. A texter writes in, I have the answer. He went and looked at the YouTube clicks, which is funny, and it really tells you something. YouTube clicks for the Ray Allen shot, 3.6 million. And you could probably find maybe another video with even more than that, but Ray Allen shot, 3.6 million views. Renteria hit, 85,000 views. That's funny, man. 3.6 million to 85,000. That tells you something. Now, since we got that nice surprise with former Hurricanes DB Tolbert Bain calling in the last segment, I didn't get to a couple things. First, I teased this a little bit. Bleacher Report ran a list, and especially this time of year when there's no actual football going on, right? Minicamp is over. You got a month before training camp, a month and a half, I think, until most training camps start. You start to rank things, you start to make lists, you start to look backwards, right? You start to look at big moments, defining moments in franchises. Bleacher Report ran a list today. Biggest mistake, every NFL team's biggest mistake of the last decade. What do you think they went with for the Miami Dolphins? Now, a couple of people texted in, and if you strictly go by the last 10 years, this doesn't quite make it because it was in 2007. But a couple of people have texted in passing up on Matt Ryan in the draft. You know, they took Jake Long, number one overall that year. That wasn't a great look. That gave you a chance at a franchise quarterback, not to mention passing up on Drew Brees, which also was more than 10 years ago. That was in 2005. But the 2007 passing up on Matt Ryan more than 10 years ago. A lot of people texting in Jeff Ireland, just Jeff Ireland, or Joe Philbin. Biggest Dolphin mistake of the last 10 years. I'll tell you what did make the cut, according to Bleacher Report, and I think they hit the nail on the head. I think they hit the nail on the head because this has already been proven, right? This guy got here, was a bust, couldn't hack it, couldn't stay on the field, couldn't stay healthy, couldn't stay off the drugs, allegedly. Drafting Deion Jordan, third overall in 2013. I can't argue with that. This is what they wrote about it. Again, the 2013 draft class was horrendous. So you basically made a mistake if you didn't trade down or pick DeAndre Hopkins. But the Miami Dolphins get a special shout out here because they were the only team that decided to trade up into the top five. Yes, 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 and yes. That's what made that move so bad, right? I can remember watching that draft. The Dolphins had the 12th overall pick in that 2013 draft. thinking, man, not a very strong draft class. Maybe you can grab one of these offensive linemen at 12th overall. And then the Dolphins were the one team, led by Jeff Ireland, by the way. The Dolphins were the one team in a weak draft class to trade up 9 spots from number 12 to number 3, and yet still draft a guy nobody thought was a top 3, let alone a top 5 pick in Deion Jordan. Still to this day, one of the most puzzling moves in Dolphins history. Like, even for Jeff Ireland, that was a bad look, trading up 9 spots to draft Deion Jordan. After giving the Raiders a second-round pick, they write, to move up from 12th to 3rd, they took defensive end Deion Jordan, who started one game and recorded 3 sacks during 4 years with the Dolphins. He was hardly a factor in 2013 and 2014, was suspended the entire 2015 season for a 3rd violation of the performance-enhancing substance policy, and didn't play a down after being reinstated in 2016. Jordan was a good riddance cut the following offseason, but the Dolphins were left wondering about everything else they could have done with the 2 premium draft picks and $19 million they wasted on the guy. Actually, you know what? I was just thinking about something. The Matt Ryan thing, that was 10 years ago. 2007 was the Ted Ginn year. Matt Ryan was 2008. I still don't think that's a bigger mistake than Deion Jordan, though. I still don't think that is. So you're right. I was wrong on the timeline on that. I don't even know if anybody texted that in. I actually caught myself on that. So I was wrong, and then I was right. How great is that? But no, so that was within 10 years ago, the Matt Ryan thing. But like, to me, that's still not a bigger mistake than trading up 9 spots to draft Deion bleeping Jordan. A good riddance cut that they wrote there in Bleacher Report. That was huge, man. I mean, I've ranked him as the biggest draft bust in Miami Dolphins history. And also, yeah, I can see that. Biggest mistake of the last 10 years for these Miami Dolphins. Texter wrote in, this is the guy who was driving from Miramar to Kendall wondering if I would talk any Canes, and then Tolbert Bain called in like magic. Unless that was Tolbert Bain texting in, that would kind of change the conversation. Dono, I'm already in Kendall. I started speeding when Tolbert Bain called for some reason. Wow. So he got you so fired up, you put your pedal to the floor. Got to watch out with that unless you've got the radar detector. Could be very, very tough. Texter writes in, biggest mistake of the last 10 years, Ryan Tannehill. He has me stuck in football purgatory. No way that was as big of a mistake as Deion Jordan. Maybe the bigger mistake than Tannehill is the fact that they've never drafted a quarterback higher than the 7th round since. Maybe that's the mistake. You know, Tito, I mentioned before the end of the hour that our own Manny Chang, who's not working tonight, he's somewhere probably watching a replay of the Eagles winning the Super Bowl back in February, because I think he watches that game back. He's got a DVR and watches it daily. Manny Chang might end up deciding the World Cup. How crazy is that to say? Let me tell you something that Manny Chang told me right before the World Cup started, right? I always rag on Chang for being a bandwagon fan. He loves to celebrate. When a team wins a championship, jumps on the bandwagon, roots for that team, he's a bandwagon kind of guy. Any sports league, he probably roots for 5 or 6 teams in that sports league. I give the guy a hard time because he doesn't just pick a team and stick with it. Now, before the World Cup started, you know, I made a joke about how, you know, there's 32 teams in the World Cup. Manny Chang is rooting for 28 of them. He told me definitively, he said, Dono, I'm only rooting for 2 teams in this World Cup. You deserve a medal for that, bro. You're only rooting for 2 teams in the World Cup. What are those teams that Manny Chang is rooting for? And he's got good reason to root for both. But here are the 2 teams Chang is rooting for. He's rooting for Peru because I guess it's the grandmother on his mother's side. And I may be mixing this up, but one of his grandmothers from Peru. So he's rooting for Peru, but he's also rooting for Germany, because his beloved grandfather on the other side of the family is German soccer fan. So Manny Chang tells me before the cup starts, I'm only rooting for 2 teams. I'm rooting for Peru, and I'm rooting for Deutschland. What happened to both of those teams over the weekend?
Took a hard L.
Peru suffers a heartbreaking 1-0 loss. And Germany, the defending cup champions, one of the top 2 teams in this World Cup. No matter who you talk to, everyone before the cup started has Brazil and Germany in no particular order. I think Brazil is the betting favorite, and they didn't win over the weekend either. They drew. But everyone has Brazil and Germany as their top two best teams in this World Cup. And somehow the two teams that Manny is rooting for, Peru and Germany, suffer heartbreaking defeats in their opening game in the group stage. This is the same Manny Chang who last year became a Florida State football fan to appease his lovely girlfriend, who's a Florida State alum. Manny Chang switched allegiances, got his University of Miami tattoo covered up, literally, and started rooting for Florida State just in time for Florida State to have their worst season since the 1970s. Just in time to have the worst season since before Bobby Bowden got there. This guy is the mush. You can't say he's not a jinx. Becomes a Florida State fan, they barely get bowl. They had to reschedule a game just to get bowl eligibility. Remember that? They had a canceled game for Hurricane Irma. They had to reschedule a game just to get into a bowl game. Then he's cheering for Germany and Peru in the World Cup. And both of those teams suffer heartbreaking 1-0 losses. This cannot be a coincidence, Tito. Any team, I'm really worried that he is becoming an Inter fan next year. I'm going to tell him, stay the hell away from my team, bro.
You block that fanship. You don't
stay away from my team because I don't want them to, like, they'll get relegated next year. They're going to end up bottom three in Serie A because of him.
Can we as Heat fans, like, remove him as a Heat fan?
Yeah, you know what? He could be the reason why we have not gone past the second round of the playoffs. Wow, another texter writes in, I'm rooting for the same two teams. So maybe it's also your fault. The biggest bust in the last 10 years for the Miami Dolphins, the coach, the offensive line coach he's talking about, getting busted doing coke. Chris Foerster, the former O-line coach, that was not a good look no matter who you are. Oh, wow, they're replaying on Fox Sports 1. They're replaying England-Tunisia. I'll get a chance to watch. I didn't see the first Harry Kane goal. I missed the first goal while I was traveling to work. So I'll get a chance to watch that back. And then, of course, he had the dramatic header in stoppage time to give victory to the Three Lions. We'll open up the phone lines when we come back. You're listening to the Alex Dono Show on WQAM. Radio.com.
Radio.com. Win-win.
We drop bows on them. Yeah, I just mentioned before the break that they're replaying the England-Tunisia game. I can finally watch that first Harry Kane goal, and I missed it. I don't know what I was looking at Twitter. I don't know what happened.
Just a garbage goal.
So I don't even know. Like, it wasn't like a free kick or a penalty kick. What did it? Was it a header? Was it a kick? Do you even know?
It was a rebound off of an original shot that he just tapped in.
What do you think was the better goal? Because I had a couple people, probably Cristiano Ronaldo fanboys, arguing this with me on Twitter because you know, I really thought that the Dries Mertens goal today for Belgium was maybe the best goal I've seen in the Cup so far. I also thought Nacho's goal for Spain was really awesome. But I had a couple people tell me, no, Dono, it's the Cristiano Ronaldo, the free kick goal, the third goal. The level of difficulty of that was so high. Like, okay, I'm not saying that bending a free kick like that is easy, but to me, you can perfectly place a volley in the top corner the way Mertens did today for Belgium when the level of difficulty, I think, for a volley like that is incredibly high because 9 times out of 10, you put it over the crossbar because it's hard to keep that shot down, the body placement. You can't prepare for that the way you can prepare for a free kick, right? Like a free kick, the ball is spotted, it's dead, right? So everything is within your control. The volley takes a lot out of your control. Like I thought that the Mertens goal to me was maybe even more impressive than the Ronaldo free kick, but a lot of the Ronaldo fanboys are arguing with me, I guess. I don't know. Maybe you're happy that he finally paid the tax man, so you're giving him some due.
I mean, it was an incredible performance from Ronaldo.
No question.
To say
no
the
question.
Least, coming off of, you know, him actually admitting defeat in that tax evasion case, I guess you could call it. But I'm still confused as to why he doesn't have to serve time.
You know, apparently there's a Spanish law that non-violent first-time offenders don't actually serve jail time. It seems kind of wacky to me how Cristiano Ronaldo was sentenced 2 years in prison. He accepted that, but he doesn't have to serve a day in prison. And initially I saw that. I said, oh, he's getting off scot-free because he's famous, right? Because he's Cristiano Ronaldo. Then apparently everyone who follows me on Twitter is an expert on the Spanish tax code. I'm so glad to see that. I'm so glad that I've got CPAs from Spain who follow me on Twitter saying, well, no, that standard first-time nonviolent offenders in Spain don't have to serve any time. I don't know, like, in a way, I can kind of respect that because, like, how many, like, nonviolent, like, part-time, like, marijuana dealers here who don't actually hurt anybody get locked up in prison for the first offense? So I can kind of respect that from Spain. I just, like, if you're Wesley Snipes or you're Martha Stewart and you've been locked up for similar crimes in America to Ronaldo, you're probably feeling kind of pissed. Man, why couldn't I do this in Spain, right? Why couldn't I commit insider trading or tax evasion in Spain? I could have actually gotten off without any jail time. So I was surprised by that, but apparently that is standard in Spain. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk with who's on line one? Is that Rick in Carroll City? Rick in Carroll City, what's up?
Donald, how you doing?
Good, man. How about you?
Great, man. I hope you enjoyed your first Father's Day.
Loved it. Loved it. People tell me that the first Father's Day is by far the best because Father's Day is it's a forgotten holiday compared to Mother's Day. But the family, they did it up big for me for the first one, so I can cherish that.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Wanted to touch base with you on one thing regarding the case. I missed the Tolbert Spain interview. Just caught you a little bit late here. But one thing I wanted to point out, have you noticed all the work that these kids are doing, these players are doing, along with the coaching staff, the entire coaching staff out in the different parks in the community?
Yes. And that was something he touched on. It was a night and day from the Al Golden coaching staff to the Mark Richt coaching staff. What they're doing in the community, parks, young kids, it's night and day.
The message that they're giving, though, is what's really impressive. Because not only is it coming from the head coach, from the assistant coaches, from the GAs, from the players themselves, and then you look at a kid like Demetrius Jackson, boy, I tell you, this kid, I think one day he'll be the mayor of Miami. He's got that opportunity. He is so engulfed in his community.
I'd vote for him.
He's stone trenched, and he's a sharp kid for someone who's had to overcome injury and balance, you know, being a full-time college athlete, and especially at this level, and balance the GPA he has. What a great kid. I mean, we really don't even touch base on kids like this enough.
Yeah, we really don't. And he's a hell of a player, too, to go along with it.
Looking at the playing perspective here, we're getting closer, 70-some-odd days, I guess, to practice or opening day, whatever it is. Right now, how do you feel about this team going into July here just about?
I feel great about everything except I think the big question marks are offensive line number one. But I also think that Stacey Searles, the coach, does a fantastic job getting the best out of these offensive lines the last 2 years. So I've got faith that he's going to find a way to really put out a solid group. But that's the number one question mark. And then I think there's question mark at defensive tackle as well. It's never easy to lose your top two tackles early to the NFL, especially when what you're talking about, fifth and sixth round draft picks. Like that's really tough. When Clemson had a couple of juniors at D tackle that probably would have been first and second rounders that opted to stay for their senior year, to lose a couple of guys who barely got drafted but were solid players and could have raised their draft stock with another year, that's a tough one for me. It's a tough hole to fill. The unbelievable playmakers for Miami defensive end. And I think the tackle position, Gerald Willis, everyone's saying great things about him. I know he's had a troubled past with the suspensions after transferring from Florida. And, you know, Nesta Silvera could get called upon to do some things as a true freshman here. So both of these are question marks. By no means am I saying the O-line's going to suck and the defensive tackles are going to suck. But I think those are the biggest questions to be answered this year.
You know, now traditionally football, I mean, even though it's evolved in the last 5-6 years to basically an outside in instead of an inside out. But it's funny how one guy in particular has been able to balance both of those components in his offense. And that's what, I mean, of course, he's got all the horses in front. But what Saban has been able to do with every offense coordinator he's brought in, they've still been able to dominate and impose their will in the trenches. And regardless of how the schemes are, that they're spread out defensively and offensively, they still do so much with those first four or five guys.
Yeah.
And it's just insane. Even though the game has really changed, and if you look at the Pac-12 and there is, even the Big 12, there's really no defense played in both of those conferences, both of those Big 5 conferences. But still, the game is changing. But I'm wondering, is Miami going to be able to impose their will in the Coastal this year? Georgia Tech's going to be a much better team. I mean, we were able to basically just and we got very lucky in that game by the skin of our teeth. We won that. But I'm wondering, teams like that, Georgia Tech, we've got to play Boston College. It's always been known to have
And Virginia Tech is it should be better this year than they were last year.
That's some big challenges to deal with in terms of imposing your will in the trench. So hopefully our trenches are going to be ready to go. And one thing I want to talk about recruiting before I go, have you seen all the kids that have committed thus far that are just these local elite players? I mean, local great athletes. We're looking at maybe Amon Richardson's brother committing here soon, but it's insane. He's getting 6'1", 6'2", guys that are just beyond athletic.
Yeah.
And if you look at DJ Ivy, the kid from South Dayton, man, his body has changed so much in, 4 months? It's just insane. We finally have a complete program. Donald, take care. Great
talk. Love it, man. I appreciate talking to you, Rick.
Go Canes, baby.
And by the way, when he mentioned Nick Saban, it reminded me of something. you see this this story, this 6'7", 380-pound, I'm assuming he's an offensive tackle. It doesn't specify in the story that I'm reading, but this is a recruit, 6'7", 380 pounds. Do you want to guess what grade he's in? And he's gotten an offer from Alabama and from Florida State for that matter.
Eighth grade.
How in the word I can't say on the radio does an eighth grader get to 6'7", 380 pounds? What are you feeding that kid? And listen, you may end up now like this kid, Kiwanta Goodwin, who's from Louisville, Kentucky. Eighth grade, you're talking about a 14-year-old, 6'7", 380 pounds. How is that even possible? Is his birth certificate forged? Is this kid really 25? 14-year-old, 6'7", 380. Going to be a hell of a football player. But man, his body's going to be in rough shape when he's 35. To be carrying around that much height and weight at that young of an age, that is insane. I saw a picture of this kid. He looks like Michael Orr from The Blind Side, and he's 14. It's ridiculous. He's already gotten an offer from Florida State, from Alabama, among other places. Where's Mark Richt? I want an offer for this kid. Offer Kiwanta Goodwin, 6'7", 380-pound eighth grader. Unbelievable stuff, man. Unbelievable. And by the way, this is fair. When I was going through some of my favorite World Cup goals from the weekend, the Philip Coutinho goal for Brazil, that was unbelievable also. And I think why I tried to block the Coutinho goal out of my memory was, I'll never forget a few years ago when Inter sold him to Liverpool for 8.5 million euros. With no sell-on clause. That's embarrassing. One of the best players in the world, as a young player, you sell him for 8.5 million euros, which is pennies, and you don't even have a sell-on clause. What the sell-on clause is, you sell a player to Team X, and then Team X later sells that player for a big sum to Team Y. Usually, you would have included, well, if you sell the guy that we're selling you, we get a percentage of that. We get a cut of that. And I can't remember what it was that Coutinho, what the fee was being sold to Barcelona, but Barcelona paid a ridiculously high price. I mean, not to say it wasn't worth it, but a very expensive transfer to buy Coutinho to Barcelona from Liverpool, and Inter, who had previously sold him, got nothing because there was no sell-on clause. So very embarrassing for me to see that player perform well. It's very hard to watch that, to be honest with you. Let's talk with Brother Jerome. You're on QAM. What's up, Jerome?
Father Alex, how you feeling?
Doing well, man. How about you?
Oh, I'm blessed, man. Good evening to you and your family, and thank you for taking my call. Brother Rick was very insightful on the Canes, man. He's a man after my own heart, man.
Definitely.
Hey, Brother Alex, I think what's going to happen with the offensive line is it may start out as a struggle, but they're going to get better because each year, this is the third year they've shown steps of improvement. It was less false starts last year from the year before and everything. And I think a couple of kids, the light might have come on late with like Jahair Jones and Hayden Mahoney. They're going to have to fight off some good competition from Denzel Bullwell, who's a transfer from Tennessee at one of the guard positions. And we're getting depth behind the pretty good depth behind it, the first teamers, and but they're gonna get better. I just think with Navon Donaldson, Brother Alex, he's gonna have to trim down a little more. And I heard, you know, through some of the posts that I've been reading on various reports that, you know, he's been doing pretty good and everything. And
good.
How about hats off to Gus Felder, man?
Yes.
He has really done a tremendous job with
he really has.
These kids, man.
He really has. And you know, no doubt Gus Felder is tremendous. And I, for my money, he's the best strength coach that Miami has ever had. But I do sometimes have to defend Andrew Swayze, the previous strength coach, because some people will rip Swayze up and down. Oh, he got players too heavy. He wanted to put on too much weight. He was taking the speed away. I mean, that was the same Andrew Swayze that was training 2001, 2002 era players. The problem that Andrew Swayze had was he had Al Golden telling him, no, I want you to make these guys bigger. Anthony Ciccolo, he's not big enough for me. So, I mean, he was serving at the pleasure of the head coach. The head coach told him, I want players to be a certain type of strength and size. Get that to me. So, you know, I think that for a lot of fans who rip Andrew Swayze, it was, and I think Gus Felder is the better strength coach. I'm glad he's here, but I do have to defend Andrew Swayze because I think some people rip him unfairly.
Yeah. Well, Brother Alex, if you recall, Coach Mark Richt made a statement last season saying that we're not there yet as far as imposing our will. I know Brother Richt had mentioned that we're not there to impose our will yet. But just think, we're getting there because the talent is getting is increasing as far as value is concerned. We're getting better kids as we go along, and more competition is created, and that's how well we get to where we can impose our will. And we're getting there. We're probably going to see more flashes of that this year, but we're headed toward dominance. There's no doubt in my mind, brother Alex, we are headed toward dominance because these local kids around here, I tell you, when they see the Canes winning, especially get to win the Coastal and get to the ACC championship, you know, they'll come. It's just like with any other sport, the Marlins, the Heat, or anybody else that's down here. You win, people will come and pack that house, and that it will take us back to that Orange Bowl type of feeling in there with that canopy around the stadium and
yes,
everything.
Sir.
And it's going to be a great time, Brother Alex, when the fall arrives. And I think we're down to day number 76 down there. And if I can share a number with you of a great hurricane in the past that wore that number, I would say Warren Sapp now.
Oh, that's a good one. Not the nicest guy, but a hell of a player.
Yeah, no, not the nicest guy, but he definitely was one heck of a player. But that's basically all I got, Brother Alex. And, hey, you have a blessed evening. Give that little one a hug for me and say hello to your wife for
me. I will.
And I'll speak with you again.
Love this guy. For my money, Jerome, nicest caller on QAM. What a great guy. Brother Jerome, as we call him. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Take more calls on the other side when we wrap up the 8 o'clock hour. Also have a new edition of Clickbait. I think this is a pretty good one. New edition of Clickbait, which includes the most spiteful billionaire I've ever heard. You think your team petty? You've got to hear about this guy. Plus more phone calls and draft projection for Miami's Lonnie Walker. If you were bitter about Lonnie Walker being one and done, leaving too early, I don't know, man. If he gets drafted where they think he's getting drafted, I think his decision is justified. The Alex Dono Show continues next.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
If you are now,
when Lonnie Walker made two crucial mistakes in the final minute of Miami's one NCAA tournament matchup against Loyola Chicago, no question I looked at that and said, man, like if he could come back for a sophomore season, like he can get better in those big moments. And I thought he failed there because you had so much pressure on a true freshman who could not come through in that clutch situation in the biggest game of the year. Right now, some people watched that and said, well, that's why he's got to come back for a sophomore season, right? That he's not a one and done guy. He's got to come back. I disagree with that because to me, his draft projection, and again, I know that it's not official until the NBA draft actually happens, maybe something awful, and I don't wish this upon him, but I guess there's still a chance that something unforeseen happens and he tumbles down the draft order and doesn't end up being a lottery pick. But here's the latest ESPN mock draft projection. Analysts now have former Miami Hurricanes basketball guard Lonnie Walker going 12th overall to the Los Angeles Clippers. Quote, an explosive leaper with a 6'10 wingspan and a versatile shooting stroke. Walker has high of an upside as any guard in this draft. Rises into pull-up threes with ease. Can tear down the rim in the open court, as we all know, and has the tools to be a plus on-ball defender. Walker left much to be desired with his consistency at Miami, but his game is tailor-made for a more open NBA game. So right now being projected number 12 to the Clippers. I think if he gets something in that range between 12 to 15, if he's a lottery pick, that to me absolutely justifies his decision to leave as a freshman. Right, that you may be wondering why Bruce Brown left as a sophomore because he may not be a first-round pick. But as far as Lonnie Walker goes, I completely expected and I understand it. I understood why he left early. Wow. A little tired this week, I guess. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Yep, a couple of other weekend observations I had, aside from some of the best goals and most surprising outcomes in the World Cup over the weekend. Tito, I think it might be time for me to purge my Twitter timeline a bit, because out of the 2,578 people I follow, I was so shocked to see nearly half of my timeline, and I follow a lot of, you know, not only personal friends, I obviously don't have 2,500 personal friends, but I follow not only personal friends, I follow a good amount of listeners, I follow sports media types. And to see nearly half of my timeline tweeting live U.S. Open updates when the World Cup is going on, I wanted to throw my phone against the wall. And okay, I can understand. If you're tweeting about Phil Mickelson's Happy Gilmore-style meltdown, right, where he misses a putt and then actually hits the ball while it's still moving to putt, like that was a meltdown. I can, like, tweeting the live video of that is fine with me. But the amount of people that I follow while the World Cup is in progress, live tweeting the U.S. Open and acting like the World Cup isn't even happening, that to me makes me question why I follow these people when their priorities on a Saturday or a Sunday, especially Saturday when it's not even the final round, how their priorities are so different from mine that they're completely ignoring the fact that the World Cup is happening. And I'm not talking about people who are paid to cover golf. That's different. I don't follow anybody who's paid to cover golf, believe me. If you're paid to cover golf, I understand why you're live tweeting that. But just sports fans, sports media types who don't cover golf specifically that I follow, who are spending their Saturday and their Sunday live tweeting the U.S. Open like the World Cup isn't even happening. I was so annoyed with that. It's my fault. I follow these people.
You see, I felt that way back in, like, when the Heat were in the finals, and I would see there's certain people on my timeline actually tweeting out what's going on in Walking Dead.
How are you watching
Walking Dead during the NBA Finals? Like, what? Like, how? I don't understand it. But I, to your point, the U.S. Open, I think it's a little different because it is a big deal. And
yes,
the incident with Phil Mickelson was pretty bizarre.
And I understand that, right? Like, if you're passing on the viral video of Phil Mickelson having a meltdown, that doesn't fall into that category for me. But if you're just live tweeting, you're just following Dustin Johnson on the course and tweeting about it, then we have a problem.
I mean, I feel like The Walking Dead is significantly worse, considering how bad that show got.
Right, well, at least in the time you're are you talking about, like, this year during the finals?
No, like, when the Heat were in the finals.
At least then The Walking Dead was still good, though. Like, that show jumped the shark. Like, who still watches that? I've got a problem with anybody who tweets about The Walking Dead now, ever. Because that show ain't good anymore, bro. That show's not good. I get mad. Like, if Game of Thrones is on the same night as The Walking Dead and you're tweeting about The Walking Dead, that's a guaranteed unfollow. Like, what are you doing? Game of Thrones is on. Also, I want to unfollow anybody who says, oh, Game of Thrones is terrible. Like, I've tried to watch. It's not good. It's just not a good show. You're not a good human being. Like, there's something wrong with you if you don't think Game of Thrones is a good show. I didn't think I was going to like it. Like, before I ever watched the show, my wife started watching it from the beginning. She watched it before I did. I didn't start watching it until season 3 because I just thought, I know myself. I don't find dragons interesting. I don't find anything medieval interesting. I don't like going back that far for TV. And it's not really set in the past. It's set in, like, you know, like a fantasy universe. But I thought I would not like Game of Thrones. So before I gave it a chance, I thought I would hate it. Then I started watching it, and wow, this is one of the greatest shows ever. So anybody who thinks they hate that show, you either haven't watched it or you're an idiot.
I feel like I should start watching The Wire because everybody tells
that's
me
a great show.
Great show.
That's a tremendous.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
And a tremendous hipster show, right? He's like, as good as The Wire is, it may not live up to the hype that people are setting you up for. Like, I love The Wire, and that's another show. Like, I didn't watch when The Wire was, like, happening, right? I didn't watch it until, like, a couple of years after it was off the air, and it was because, like, every hipster is like, oh, you think you know good TV? You haven't watched The Wire. Like, that'll change TV for you. And it's a great show. Some amazing characters. Omar from The Wire, maybe one of the best TV characters ever. Stringer Bell, tremendous TV character. Marlo, Avon Barksdale, like, iconic characters in that show. It's a fantastic show, but it may not live up to the hype because the hipsters have talked it up so much that it may not be able to live up to that expectation for you.
If I gave you the full list of shows that I still need to watch because I haven't watched them, I think you'd be very surprised.
Yeah? Can you make that list for me before 10?
I could do it right now.
Well, let me give you a minute because I want to take some calls. I want to make sure you don't leave anything out. But I do want to get to that list in an upcoming segment. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. Let's talk to Stormcat. What's up, Stormcat?
AD, look here. What word are you scared to say? H-E double hockey stick?
No, I'll say hell.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, you say you understand why Lonnie Walker leaving, right?
I understand it, sure, yeah.
Why?
Because he is, by all likelihood, going to be a top 15 draft pick. I can understand leaving early to be a lottery pick. Now, do I wish he came back for his sophomore year? Absolutely, because I think he could be a tremendous closer for the Canes and one of the best players in the ACC. But from his side of it, to actually make some money, to become a millionaire when the draft comes around and to likely be a lottery pick, I can understand why you would want to leave early. It's just reality.
And that's it? So he's going to be a lottery pick and a millionaire?
Yeah, I mean, you don't think those are good reasons to be drafted?
Do you know Kareem Jabbar played 4 years at UCLA?
I understand that, but unfortunately, it's such a different era now. Guys don't want to risk injury. Guys don't want to risk their draft stock falling. It's just now, and I mean, you know, Kobe, LeBron James, they didn't go to college, period. I mean, guys look at the landscape now and they say, you know what, if I can be a lottery pick, it's time to cash in my lottery ticket.
AD, I'm not challenging what you're saying, but when are we going to start talking about the guys, the first round picks who don't pan out? When are we going to start talking about that?
Well, Justice Winslow went to Duke for he was a one and done guy also. Who was it? I'm trying to think of somebody who was a 4 year guy who didn't pan out. That wasn't Winslow.
No. I'm talking about the one and done. No. Don't go there. Let's go back to the one and done. You know, who don't pan out. And
yeah, you usually the guys who didn't go to Duke or Kentucky don't always pan out.
Yeah. Okay, the guy who say who go, the 4 or 5 players who go to Alabama, you know, hey, those 4 to 5 players, they 5-star players, you know?
Yeah.
They like 2-year players. They ready to go to the league. You know? And Saban, he the man when it comes to recruits. You know? And you know, hey, man, look at here. Phew. Boy, man, look at here. Hey, the Hurricanes, that's my team. I love them. That's my team. You know, right now, last year we're caught up with them is depth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 2001, yep. If Mar Walton would have got hurt, who would have had behind him? McGahee.
Yeah, you would have had Frank Gore, you know, McGahee, Najee Davenport was on that team, Clinton Portis. It was
and
tremendous.
And the redshirt dude would have got in there and ran the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so, hey, the Hurricane problem right now is depth. They got to come up. Because you remember we used to turn down players, AD?
Yep.
Trying to come to the U.
That's what Alabama has to do now. Alabama has to turn guys down who want to go there.
That's what I'm talking about, you know? So, hey, I'm a Hurricane through and through and through and through. But, hey, I'm just sitting back watching right now. For me, my pom-pom ain't up yet. I'm just being brutally honest. My pom-pom ain't up yet because I'm 59 years old. I seen them when they won the first one.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So, hey, I know I'm from the roots, you know? So, hey, we got to keep on keeping on. Yep. Okay, AD.
All right, Stormcat. I love talking to you, man.
Yeah.
Although, and obviously, Miami doesn't have, they don't have 2001 depth. You'll probably never see 2001 depth ever again, to be honest with you. But if you're just talking running back, they don't look too shabby there. Travis Homer, Lorenzo Lingard, Cam Davis, DJ Dallas, most versatile player on that offense. The guy can line up in the slot. He can play wildcat quarterback, running back. Dangerous, dangerous players. So running back-wise, that team is in great shape, right? They don't have 2001 depth at defensive tackle, offensive line, linebacker, although they have great linebackers. They don't have that kind of depth that they had in 2001. They do have good depth at defensive end, though, also. That Greg Rousseau, that freshman, I think he's going to tear it up this year. So they have decent depth at certain positions, and running back is one of those. As long as the O-line can open up a few holes between Travis Homer, DJ Dallas, Lorenzo Lingard, Cam Davis, they got a lot of options there, man. And you think about the trademark of a Mark Richt coach team to his time at Georgia. You always have two deep, three deep, four deep at running back. You always have multiple threats at the running back position. That was always his trademark at Georgia. That is a position that man can recruit. And to what Stormcat was saying about valuing four-year guys, one-and-done guys panning out, I understand what he's saying, that a lot of the one-and-done guys turn out to be draft busts. You're talking about an entire culture change. What would entice the players of today to stay in school for 3-4 years the way Michael Jordan did? The way Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a four-year player, did. Like, you're talking about an entire paradigm shift, an entire culture change. If you pay players stipend, let players make money off of their naming rights, autograph signings, merchandise, video games. They took college players. They don't make those video games anymore. If you could actually find a way to financially entice players to stay in college, I think that's the only way to do it. I mean, aside from just coming out and saying, oh, instead of a one-and-done rule, we've now got a four-year rule. You have to be 22 to be drafted. They would never do that. But I think aside from changing the rule and forcing players to be 4 years out of high school to play in the NBA, I think the only way to convince guys to stay in school for 3-4 years would be to actually entice guys financially. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. We still have clickbait to do. We'll do it in the 9 o'clock hour. You're listening to the Alex Donner Show on QAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.